Chapter 23. Here the landlord was interrupted by several guttural sounds from Ram Rapelya, beckoning that he was laboring with the unusual production of an idea, as he was too great a man to be slighted by a prudent publican. Mine host respectfully paused until he should deliver himself. The corpulent frame of this mighty burgher now gave all the symptoms of a volcanic mountain on the point of an eruption. First there was a certain heaving of the abdomen, not unlike an earthquake. Then was emitted a cloud of tobacco smoke from that crater, his mouth. Then there was a kind of rattle in the throat, as if the idea were working its way up through a region of phlegm. Then there were several disjointed members of a sentence thrown out, ending in a cough. At length his voice forced its way into a slow, but absolute tone of a man who feels the weight of his purse, if not of his ideas, every portion of his speech, being marked by a testy puff of tobacco smoke. Who talks of old Peter Stuyvesant's walking? Puff, have people no respect for persons? Puff, puff, Peter Stuyvesant knew better what to do with his money than to bury it. Puff, I know the Stuyvesant family. Puff, every one of them. Puff, semicolon, not a more respectable family in the province. Puff, old standards. Puff, warm householders. Puff, none of your upstarts. Puff, 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 don't talk to me of Peter Stuyvesant's walking. Puff, 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 puff. Here the redoubtable Ram contracted his brow, clasped up his mouth till it wrinkled at each corner, and redoubled his smoking with such vehemence that the cloudy volume soon wreathed round his head, as the smoke envelops the awful summit of Mount Etna. A general silence followed the sudden rebuke of this very rich man. The subject, however, was too interesting to be readily abandoned. The conversation soon broke forth again from the lips of Peachy Prawe Van Hook, the chronicler of the club, one of those prosing, narrative old men who seem to be troubled with an incontinence of words as they grow old. Peachy could, at any time, tell as many stories in an evening as his hearers could digest in a month. He now resumed the conversation by affirming that, to his knowledge, money had, at different times, been digged up in various parts of the island. The lucky persons who had discovered them had always dreamed of them three times beforehand, and, what was worthy of remark, those treasures had never been found, but by some descendant of the good old Dutch families, which clearly proved that they had been buried by Dutchmen in the olden time. "Fiddlestick with your Dutchmen!" cried the half-pay officer. "He Dutch had nothing to do with them. They were all buried by Kit the pirate and his crew." Here a keynote was touched that roused the whole company. The name of Captain Kidd was like a talisman in those times, and was associated with a thousand marvelous stories. The half-pay officer took the lead, and in his narrations fathered upon Kidd all the plunderings and exploits of Morgan, 1, Blackbeard, 2, and the whole list of bloody buccaneers. 1. Sir Henry Morgan, 1637-90, a noted Welsh buccaneer. He was captured and sent to England for trial, but Charles II, instead of punishing him, knighted him, and subsequently appointed him governor of Jamaica. 2. Edward Teach, one of the most cruel of the pirates, took command of a pirate ship in 1717, and thereafter committed all sorts of atrocities until he was slain by Lieutenant Maynard in 1718. His nickname of Blackbeard was given him because of his black beard. The officer was a man of great weight among the peaceable members of the club, by reason of his warlike character and gunpowder tales. All his golden stories of Kidd, however, and of the booty he had buried, were obstinately rivaled by the tales of Peachy Prawe, who, rather than suffer his Dutch progenitors to be eclipsed by a foreign freebooter, enriched every field and shore in the neighborhood with the hidden wealth of Peter Stuyvesant and his contemporaries. Not a word of this conversation was lost upon Wolfert Webber. He returned pensively home, full of magnificent ideas. The soil of his native island seemed to be turned into gold dust, and every field to teem with treasure. His head almost reeled at the thought, how often he must have heedlessly rambled over places where countless sums lay, scarcely covered by the turf beneath his feet. His mind was in an uproar with this whirl of new ideas. As he came in sight of the venerable mansion of his forefathers, and the little realm, where the Webbers had so long, and so contentedly flourished, his gorge rose at the narrowness of his destiny. "Unlucky Wolfert!" exclaimed he. "Others can go to bed and dream themselves into whole mines of wealth. They have but to seize a spade in the morning, and turn up doubloons, one, like potatoes. But thou must dream of hardships, and rise to poverty, must dig thy field from year's end to year's end, and yet raise nothing but cabbages. One, Spanish gold coins, equivalent to $15.60. Wolfert Webber went to bed with a heavy heart, and it was long before the golden visions that disturbed his brain permitted him to sink into repose. The same visions, however, extended into his sleeping thoughts, and assumed a more definite form. He dreamed that he had discovered an immense treasure in the center of his garden. At every stroke of the spade he laid bare a golden ingot. Diamond crosses sparkled out of the dust. Bags of money turned up their bellies, corpulent with pieces of 8-1, or venerable doubloons, and chests wedged close with mitres, 2, ducats, 3, and pistarenes, 4, yawned before his ravished eyes, and vomited forth their glittering contents. 1, Spanish coins, worth about $1 each. 2, Portuguese gold coins, valued at $6.50. 3, coins of gold and silver, valued at $2 and $1 respectively. 4, Spanish silver coins, worth about $1.20. Wolfert awoke a poorer man than ever. He had no heart to go about his daily concerns, which appeared so paltry and profitless, but sat all day long in the chimney corner, picturing to himself ingots and heaps of gold in the fire. The next night his dream was repeated. He was again in his garden digging, and laying open stores of hidden wealth. There was something very singular in this repetition. He passed another day of reverie, and though it was cleaning day, and the house, as usual in Dutch households, completely topsy-turvy, yet he sat unmoved amidst the general uproar. The third night he went to bed with a palpitating heart. He put on his red nightcap wrong side outward, for good luck. It was deep midnight before his anxious mind could settle itself into sleep. Again the golden dream was repeated, and again he saw his garden teeming with ingots and money bags. Wolfert rose the next morning in complete bewilderment. A dream, three times repeated, was never known to lie, and if so, his fortune was made. In his agitation he put on his waistcoat with the hind part before, and this was a corroboration of good luck. 1. He no longer doubted that a huge store of money lay buried somewhere in his cabbage field, coyly waiting to be sought for, and he repined at having so long been scratching about the surface of the soil instead of digging to the center. 1. It is an old superstition that to put on one's clothes wrong side out forebodes good luck. He took his seat at the breakfast table, full of these speculations, asked his daughter to put a lump of gold into his tea, and on handing his wife a plate of slapjacks, begged her to help herself to a doubloon. His grand care now was how to secure this immense treasure without its being known. Instead of his working regularly in his grounds in the daytime, he now stole from his bed at night, and with spade and pickaxe went to work to rip up and dig about his paternal acres, from one end to the other. In a little time the whole garden, which had presented such a goodly and regular appearance, with its phalanx of cabbages, like a vegetable army in battle array, was reduced to a scene of devastation, while the relentless Wolfert, with nightcap on head and lantern and spade in hand, stalked through the slaughtered ranks, the destroying angel of his own vegetable world. Every morning bore testimony to the ravages of the preceding night in cabbages of all ages and conditions, from the tender sprout to the full-grown head, piteously rooted from their quiet beds like worthless weeds, and left to wither in the sunshine. In vain Wolfert's wife remonstrated. In vain his darling daughter wept over the destruction of some favorite marigold. Who shalt have gold of another guess one sword, he would cry, chucking her under the chin. Thou shalt have a string of crooked ducats for thy wedding necklace, my child. His family began really to fear that the poor man's wits were diseased. He muttered in his sleep at night about mines of wealth, about pearls and diamonds, and bars of gold. In the daytime he was moody and abstracted, and walked about, as if in a trance. Dom Weber held frequent councils with all the old women of the neighborhood. Scarce an hour in the day, but a knot of them might be seen wagging their white caps together round her door, while the poor woman made some piteous recital. The daughter, too, was fain to seek for more frequent consolation from the stolen interviews of her favorite swain, Dirk Waldron. The delectable little Dutch songs with which she used to dulcify the house grew less and less frequent, and she would forget her sewing, and look wistfully in her father's face as he sat pondering by the fireside. Wolfert caught her eye one day fixed on him thus anxiously, and for a moment was roused from his golden reveries. Cheer up, my girl, said he exultingly. Why dost thou droop? Thou shalt hold up thy head one day with the Brinkerhoffs, and the Schermerhorns, the Van Horns, and the Van Dams. 2. By St. Nicholas, but the patroon, 3. Himself shall be glad to get thee for his son. 1. A corruption of the old expression, Nother Gates, or F another gate, meaning F another way or manner, hence, of another kind. 2. Names of rich and influential Dutch families in the old Dutch colony of New Amsterdam. 3. The patroons were members of the Dutch West India Company, who purchased land in New Netherlands of the Indians, and after fulfilling certain conditions imposed with a view to colonizing their territory, enjoyed feudal rights similar to those of the barons of the Middle Ages. Amy shook her head at his vainglorious boast, and was more than ever in doubt of the soundness of the good man's intellect. In the meantime Wolfert went on digging and digging, but the field was extensive, and as his dream had indicated no precise spot, he had to dig at random. The winter set in before one-tenth of the scene of promise had been explored. The ground became frozen hard, and the nights too cold for the labors of the spade. No sooner, however, did the returning warmth of spring loosen the soil, and the small frogs begin to pipe in the meadows, but Wolfert resumed his labors with renovated zeal. Still, however, the hours of industry were reversed. Instead of working cheerily all day, planting, and setting out his vegetables, he remained thoughtfully idle, until the shades of night summoned him to his secret labors. In this way he continued to dig from night to night, and week to week, and month to month, but not a stiver one did he find. On the contrary, the more he digged the poorer he grew. The rich soil of his garden was digged away, and the sand and gravel from beneath was thrown to the surface, until the whole field presented an aspect of sandy barrenness. 1. A Dutch coin, worth about 2 cents, hence, anything of little worth. In the meantime, the seasons gradually rolled on. The little frogs which had piped in the meadows in early spring croaked as bullfrogs during the summer heats, and then sank into silence. The peach tree budded, blossomed, and bore its fruit. The swallows and martins came, twittered about the roof, built their nests, reared their young, held their congress along the eaves, and then winged their flight in search of another spring. The caterpillar spun its winding sheet, dangled in it from the great buttonwood tree before the house, turned into a moth, fluttered with the last sunshine of summer, and disappeared. And finally the leaves of the buttonwood tree turned yellow, then brown, then rustled one by one to the ground, and whirling about in little eddies of wind and dust, whispered that winter was at hand. Wolfert gradually woke from his dream of wealth as the year declined. He had reared no crop for the supply of his household during the sterility of winter. The season was long and severe, and for the first time the family was really straitened in its comforts. By degrees a revulsion of thought took place in Wolfert's mind, common to those whose golden dreams have been disturbed by pinching realities. The idea gradually stole upon him that he should come to want. He already considered himself one of the most unfortunate men in the province, having lost such an incalculable amount of undiscovered treasure, and now, when thousands of pounds had eluded his search, to be perplexed for shillings and pence was cruel in the extreme. Haggard care gathered about his brow. He went about with a money-seeking air, his eyes bent downward into the dust, and carrying his hands in his pockets, as men are apt to do when they have nothing else to put into them. He could not even pass the city almshouse without giving it a rueful glance, as if destined to be his future abode. The strangeness of his conduct and of his looks occasioned much speculation and remark. For a long time he was suspected of being crazy, and then everybody pitied him, and at length it began to be suspected that he was poor, and then everybody avoided him. The rich old burghers of his acquaintance met him outside the door when he called, entertained him hospitably on the threshold, pressed him warmly by the hand at parting, shook their heads as he walked away, with the kind-hearted expression of Ur Wolfert, and turned a corner nimbly, if by chance they saw him approaching as they walked the streets. Even the barber and the cobbler of the neighborhood, and a tattered tailor in an alley hard by, three of the poorest and merriest rogues in the world, eyed him with that abundant sympathy which usually attends a lack of means, and there is not a doubt, but their pockets would have been at his command, only that they happened to be empty. Thus everybody deserted the Weber mansion, as if poverty were contagious, like the plague everybody but honest Dirk Waldron, who Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.